This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Okanagan Crush Pad Winery. Freeform wines are the newest release from Okanagan Crush Pad. Visit the winery to taste. They're open daily from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio for August 4th, 2018. So much for July. And happy birthday to my sister, Maureen Louis Armstrong, who was born on this date in 1901 in New Orleans. As promised, we're going to give you a top drop two in Vancouver. But there's one story added here, and it's on the tail end of the show. And it's a CEO of a major winery in the Okanagan. The winery is Summerhill Pyramid Winery. The CEO is Ezra Sipes. And the Sipes family have always been in the wine business, the sustainability business, and organics, biodynamics, LEED certification, and music. They love music so much that they have formed a band, and they've been playing in their own band for years. The band now is called the Ootnoots, and their new album is called Electric Jellyfish Boogaloo. And we're going to talk to Ezra Sipes at the end of the show, not only about this band and the fact that his daughter Ruth, 11 years old, is a really good lead singer. Plus, next weekend, they're playing at the Salmon Arm Roots and Blues Festival, and that's what I wanted to tell you about. Here's the show. Enjoy. This is Tasting Room Radio, Year 10. We began our life on the Naramata bench many years ago, and I thought if I did a show like Tasting Room Radio about food and wine, that I could teach myself about food and wine, and anyone who listened could learn as well, and that's what we've done. Here's the cool thing. I get to meet people along the way who are absolutely fantastic. One is Curtis Colt. He's a wine educator. He's a wine expert. He's a judge. He's a teacher. And he, along with his friends, Jeff Curry in particular, have now done 5 years of Top Drop Vancouver. It's a wine festival, small, just a couple of days. But these are all winemakers and owners and wineries who do their very best to be sustainable, organic, to not mess around with the fruit, to let it express itself. No additives, no sulfates, no chemicals, none of that stuff. And they're honest. They're true to the land. And it's reflected in their wines. We did part one last week. If you missed it, you might want to listen just for the interview with Jane Ferrari from Yolumba. She's a feature film, is what Jane is. So part two, we couldn't get everybody in part one, and all of the interviews would not fit into part one, so part two is this show. We start with two of the highest profile California wineries and the presidents of both of them. At Ridge, world famous Ridge, I think you know the story of Ridge. One of the wines that was poured at the Judgment of Paris, the shot heard round the world in 1976 when the Californians met or matched or beat the French at their own game. David Amadia will tell you the story behind how they got poured there because they didn't want to give Stephen Spurrier, the organizer, any of their wines. So he had to go to California and buy it. And Beth Novak-Milliken, who is the president of Spotswood, Top Drop, presented two Croatian wineries. I found one of the owners and winemakers from Stina in Croatia, and I paired him up with Wendy Ballester. And her specialty is Spanish wines. She did live there for a number of years. And the last interview is with Mark Vlosak, who is the founder and winemaker at St. Innocent in the Willamette Valley, Oregon. And then, quite a remarkable story right underneath my nose. I'm in Nanoose Bay, Vancouver Island, just north of Nanaimo. Much to my astonishment, I discovered that there was a winery above Nanaimo in the hills. It's called Chateau Wolf. And the vines there, including a Pinot Noir, are some 25 years old. And there's a young couple, Matt and Nat. Matt and Natalie Riga have taken over this winery, have cleaned it up, and with help have turned those vines around. Can you imagine a 25-year-old Pinot in Nanaimo? They're beautiful wines. So that's the show. At the end of this hour, I'll tell you what's coming down the road because we have some very interesting interviews next week. But let's get started. This is Tasting Room Radio. Cheers. My list has a double star beside Ridge Vineyards. Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California. David Amadia is the president. Before I think of Ridge and before I think of Sonoma County, I think of Santa Cruz. If I'm not mistaken, Neil Young is somewhere in the area, is yes. he?
Yeah, he lives in the mountains right above Woodside. He has an estate up there, exactly.
And there's a bar up the spine of that where we always did the interviews.
Yeah.
We went out onto porches in this bar that I thought we were going to collapse into the valley.
Yeah.
And that's Neil Young, but that's a whole other
thing. There's a couple of really nice bars up in the mountains. There's Alice's Restaurant and a couple of places you can ride your motorcycle up or your bicycle and have a nice drink up there. It's a good spot.
What do you share the valley with?
We're growing wines in the Santa Cruz Mountains, which is right above Silicon Valley. Now, Silicon Valley today, there's not much grown down there anymore.
No.
But before Prohibition, there were about almost 100 wineries down there, and it was also a lot of orchards. And that's really what it was, a real agriculture area, which is the Santa Clara Valley. But today, it's all Google, Apple, and Facebook that it's taken over down there, and a lot of residential.
What happened to those ghost vineyards? Did some of them survive?
In the southern part of the Santa Clara Valley, there are still vineyards going down towards Gilroy and that area, the southern part of the valley. There still are vineyards down there, but, you know, progress and humans are slowly encroaching south, as you might imagine.
This is Top Drop 2018. I'm Terry David Mulligan. He is David Amadia, and he is the president of Ridge Vineyards, the famous Ridge Vineyards, Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California. I know from my brief history of California wines that Ridge was one of the players at the 1976 Judgment of Paris. What was poured that day from your label?
That was the 1971 Montebello. So that was our ninth vintage. Our first vintage of Montebello was 1962. All those wines were selected by Stephen Spurrier. We had nothing to do with the selection. A matter of fact, as Stephen tells the story, he called up the winery and told them about the tasting he was going to have and asked if we could provide a bottle, and we told him no, we couldn't. He called back again about 2 weeks later and asked again and explained, and they basically said, well, we don't sell wine in the UK, and we don't give out free samples to anyone. So eventually he just showed up at the winery, came to California, came up there, explained again what he was doing, and we told him no again, and eventually he had to buy a bottle. And that's how we got the wine for the 76 tasting. He actually had to come to the winery and buy a 71 Montebello.
And what effect did that win and that placement have and that showing have on the label?
Well, it wasn't just the impact on Ridge. The impact was gigantic. But the impact on the whole wine world was gigantic, because up until that time, people only thought great wines would come from France. And really, after that tasting, things changed, and people started to think that great wines can come from different parts of the world, including California and Australia and New Zealand and Chile and places like that. So, but for us, we had always had a hard time selling wines, even in places like New York City and Boston in the 70s. But after that tasting, things really started to change, and restaurateurs and fine wine shops really started to embrace California wines. And that was probably the biggest short-term effect we saw.
Top Drop 2018, David Amadia, and he is the president of the famous Ridge Vineyards, Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California. Did you do one of the seminars?
Yes, I did.
Which one?
I did a seminar with four other California wineries, and we were really talking about trends in California wine and different winemaking philosophies.
Did you agree on what the leading trend was?
It was a well-chosen group, and all of us really were about making terroir-driven wines in a balanced style with moderate alcohol and good freshness in the wine. So there was a real unanimity about that philosophy. And as a counter to sort of that overblown, overripe style that's really you find a lot of in California.
And how is Canada as a market for you?
It's always been a very good market. I mean, I love this market. I worked up here in the wine business for 5 years, so I've spent a lot of time here. I've always enjoyed coming here. I got engaged in Whistler, so I have a lot of personal connections to the area. It's just hard right now, given the strength of the dollar. And for us, we're selling out of our wine, so we're not in a position to provide huge discounts for our wines coming here. So our wines seem relatively expensive, unfortunately, because of the strength of the dollar. But as we all know, that's a fickle thing, and that changes over time, and we just have to be patient.
What goes around comes around.
That's correct. Yeah.
How much of the portfolio are you pouring today? What have you got on the table?
Oh, my goodness. We have a really nice selection. I think we have about 8 wines, including, I think, 5 Zinfandel. So if anybody's interested in getting a terroir tour of California and looking at single vineyard Zinfandels, we got Lytton Springs or Geyserville or Pagani Ranch.
I'm a Zap head. I'm coming over. I'm going to do that. You brought over the Ridge 2015 Geyserville 50 vintage.
Yeah, so this is our 15 Geyserville. It's our 50th anniversary bottling. Our first vintage at Geyserville was in 1966. We've made it now for more than 50 consecutive years. And this is, Jancis Robinson said, this is one of the 100 top vineyard sites in the world at Geyserville. It's an old vine vineyard. The vines are about 130 years old.
What do they look like?
Gnarly old men, like you and me.
I feel like a vine today, yes.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful site because it's not just Zinfandel. All these old vines were interplanted with other varieties. Here at Carignan, it's the second variety, about 20% of the blend. Yeah. There's Petit Syrah, Alicante Boucher, Mourvèdre. We've actually gone out and documented there's 22 different grape varieties in this vineyard. All of them are picked together and co-fermented.
It's a field blend?
It's a field blend.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a tremendous wine. And it's a vineyard we had a 32-year lease on, but we actually bought the vineyard 2 years ago. So we've brought it in-house after 48 years, and now it's will be part of Ridge forever.
Last question. What is the next great project for Ridge?
Yeah, I mean, Ridge is a very sort of slow-moving, conservative organization.
Which is why I ask it now.
I know. And we don't make a lot of changes very quickly. But this coming vintage, we're going to do something new and interesting. We're going to experiment with white Rhone varieties. And we're going to be buying some fruit down in Paso Robles, down by Tablas Creek, and we're going to make a Roussan-Marsan blend for the first time ever.
God bless you. I have a mic in my hand or I'd hug you. Thank you. Two of the nicest words on the planet, Roussan-Marsan.
Yeah.
Thank you for this. I appreciate it. And welcome to Chop Drop in Vancouver.
Thank you. Really nice to be here.
We're speaking with David Amadia, who is the president of Ridge Vineyards in Sonoma County, Santa Cruz, California.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a home for passionate fans of food, wine, and friends.
From the land of three named people, Beth Novak-Milliken, who is the president and CEO of Spotswood. So we have two California winemakers, very famous back-to-back, Napa Valley, California, family proprietor, president, and CEO. And last night, if I'm not mistaken, were you at Boulevard? Were you pouring at Boulevard?
Yes, I was pouring at Boulevard, along with Paul Paul from Blackbird Wines, Paul Leary, and it was a really wonderful dinner. Their food's fantastic.
What was it called? Was there a name for it?
I don't remember that there was a name for it. It was just a winemaker dinner at Boulevard with Blackbird and Spotswood Winery.
And I made this note, and I wonder if it's you. They poured cabs, including a pre-release 100-point 2015.
Right. We poured that at the very end because it's a really limited production, and we got 100 points from the Wine Advocate on that wine, and so we just wanted to give everybody the chance to taste it because it's limited. It's not going to be a lot of it, and it was an opportunity to share it with people.
Let me get this right. It's in barrel?
No, it has been bottled. Okay. The 15 right. was bottled in 2017, and it will be released this fall. This September, it will be in
but
the market.
When they gave you 100 points, was it in barrel then?
No, it was okay. Let me think about that. I think it had just been bottled, actually.
Because that's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Because, you know, in barrel is not the same wine you're going to taste a year later.
Well, I mean, it depends, right? If you're going to have a press person taste your barrel lot, either you're going to put together a facsimile of what the finished wine will be, or you'll share your core blend, kind of what you put together, and let them know, look, that's about 60%. In this case, they tasted the final wine.
Talking to Beth Milliken, the family proprietor and president CEO of Spotswood Estate Winery in Napa. There's someone in the room, David Schofield, who always talks about the narrative of wineries.
Yes.
Tell me about the narrative of Spotswood, exactly how you got to this point. I know there's a lot of years there. But and what your brand represents to these wine fans.
Well, thank you. Yeah, our family bought the property. My family bought the property in 1972. And after my father's unexpected death, my mother stayed and started making wine from our estate vineyard in 1982. And we started farming organically, actually, in 1985. So we were one of the first to do that, certified in 92. So that's something that's really, really important to us. Our vineyard, we're 45 acres right on the western edge of the town of St. Helena in Napa Valley. So a romantic description is that you go to the Chevron station and make a left, go six blocks, and you'll run right into our property. It's just a really neat old property. And when we moved there in 1972, Napa Valley was undiscovered. Land prices were low, and we were lucky to move there when we did.
When I'm standing at Stagecoach, for example, can I look down and see your property?
At Stagecoach, no. If you were, say, up at Newton, you could look down at our winery. Yeah, you can look. So Stagecoach, no. But so we're further north and on the other side of the valley. We're on the west side of the town of St. Helena.
And how different is that terroir from, say, Stagecoach?
Completely different. So Stagecoach is up on Atlas Peak.
Right.
We're alluvial soils down on the western edge of, so it's benchland, basically. It's alluvial, so well-drained, sandy, kind of deep, rich soils. Good roots. The roots can go well deep into the soil. And
what'd you bring to pour?
I brought our 2016 Sauvignon Blanc, our 2014 Lindenhurst Cabernet, which is our Napa Valley Cabernet, and then our 2014 Spotswood Cabernet Sauvignon, which is from 100% from our estate.
Does that, I'm not going to presume that there's no blends back in the portfolio back at the winery.
This is a Cabernet Sauvignon, but it is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Petit Verdot. So it's probably 86% Cabernet Sauvignon, 9% Cabernet Franc, and the remainder Petit Verdot.
Isn't that the best part of winemaking?
Yes.
The blending?
Yes, it does. It adds. It makes it interesting, right? It sort of spices in your spice rack. So aside from everything else that you do, right, it's like having different pieces that you can pull together to create something that's more elevated than it would be just by itself.
Talking to Beth Milliken, the family proprietor and president CEO of Spotswood Estate Winery in Napa. How's your relationship to Canada?
Really good. Love Canada. Yeah, we have a great importer here and love being in Canada.
What's the next big challenge for Napa?
Next big challenge. I mean, dealing with a climate change, a warming planet, which we all know is changing. There are some people, unfortunately, in our country that don't believe that, but we know it is happening.
Yes. And they don't know.
Yeah, no, they're... Yeah, I'm not going to even get there.
Never.
Because I'm sorry and disgusted. So probably climate change and just addressing, making sure that we're ahead of all of that. Just doing everything that we can to respond to warmer, drier temperatures.
Last question. Has your wine drinker changed south of the border? Is it younger? Are they looking for different things?
You know, our primary drinking or our primary customers, because we sell a lot direct to consumer, are probably in the 50 and 60 year old ranges. Having said that, we have a lot of people in their 40s getting on the list. So they are looking for that generation is definitely looking for wines like what we're doing, because we're sort of a winery in Napa Valley that we're making wines that have the beauty of California, but that retain their freshness, their energy, their tension. So we're looking at making wines that have great balance, great staying power, that are truly representations of their place, of their source, so they honor their estate origins. That's really important to us. And I think people are interested in that authenticity.
How do you like the room?
Like this room very much. I've been here
just
once before. Top Drop is very cool. Yeah, no, they do a great job.
It looks good on you here as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Nice talking to you.
She is Beth Novak Milliken, and she is the family proprietor, the president, and the CEO of Spotswood Estate Winery in Napa Valley, California.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Okanagan Crush Pad Winery. New from Okanagan Crush Pad Winery, free-form wines made from organic grapes, native yeasts, free of additives. Visit OkanaganCrushPad.com to order online. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by NewDistrict.ca. Did you know you can buy wine online? Just takes a few clicks for quality wine to show up at your door. Plus, NewDistrict.ca offers free shipping on orders over $200 and two-day delivery in the Lower Mainland. Go to NewDistrict.ca to order.
Here's one of the reasons why I came to Top Drop 2018 at the Roundhouse in Vancouver. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. I saw that there were two Croatian wineries here, and we have finally hooked up with one of them. Stina is the name of the label in Dalmatia, Croatia. And Emil Medin is the marketing director. And he has come all the way from where? Where did you come from?
From Bol, one small place on the island of Brač in Dalmatia in the Adriatic Sea.
Does Croatia understand its place in the world of wine? Do they understand how important they were to get to this point?
Yeah, listen, we are putting a lot of effort recently in marketing of Croatia as a wine country. Though, does everyone understand in Croatia the importance of that? I'm not sure, but for sure at least 10 to 20 wineries, our colleagues, that are putting a lot of effort to make some export and to make positioning of Croatia on the worldwide map.
Yeah,
yeah, we absolutely have to understand and do understand more than anyone in Croatia the meaning of that.
Now, how important is Canada and North America to Croatian wines worldwide?
I think in the potential of the market, for sure, it is very, very important. We have some nice sales in the United States. Our sales in BC are quite well in the beginning of this year. Also, we started Alberta this year. So, yeah, market is very interesting. And more than that, you're just one country of amazingly sympathetic people. One country where we always have a pleasure to come, you know, to feel really, really, really welcomed. Country of beautiful living, and more than anything, country that is not closed. Country very open-minded,
yes,
in the sense of wine.
Yes.
People there, you have a lot of, but in a good sense, not to take me in a bad way, wine geeks who want to taste something new, which is quite important
for
us.
They're not stuck in tradition.
Yes, not at all.
But
also, I'm following for the last 4 years as much Stina is here at present at the market development of BC wines, for example, and I see that you're making huge steps in quality.
Yes.
That's beautiful because people will understand more and more. And so that this is something, you know, we are coming here mainly with our indigenous varieties. It is our pride, our heritage. And it is not always easy to introduce those varieties to foreign markets, but in Canada they were really received amazingly well.
We're talking about Croatian wines, and Emil Midden is the marketing director at Stina in Dalmatia, Croatia. You know who Mike Gergic is? Okay, no. The reason why I say that is because people know him as a star in Napa.
I don't know if you're aware that he has his own winery in Croatia.
He does.
And his managing director in Croatia is my very good friend, Krešo Vučković. And I'm pushing him as we are friends. You know, Croatia is a small country, saying, Krešo, I really don't give a damn if you are going to sell a bottle or two or none of them. I'm willing that we all participate in your showing anywhere in the world with
sure.
the Croatian wine,
right.
because the name Grgic means a lot.
Yes.
Means more today around the world, wine world, more than name of Croatian wines.
Here's the strange thing. He couldn't get into America, so he landed in Halifax, took the train across, stopped here. He phoned the two wineries that were making wine in BC and said, I'm a Croatian winemaker, I can make wines for you. And they said, no, we're no. And he headed to Napa, Sonoma.
Really? I didn't know that fact.
And that's how they ended up.
He
could have been here. So here's the thing. What has Croatia given us in terms of what varietals are we looking at now that Croatia makes?
Today, from our colleague who is present here in BC market through another agent, Moreno Koronika, he's from Istria region. So you have two typical varieties for Istria, Istrian Malvasia and Teran as a red variety. And we are present here with Poship, which is our most important white variety of Dalmatia. Looking forward, because it is sold out, our production is not too big. I really want to introduce another very, very nice white Dalmatian variety, Vugava, indigenous, to BC market, I hope, next year. And in red varieties, we are growing Plavac Mali, most important Croatian red variety, Dalmatian variety. I don't know if you know or not, seems that you do. We are growing some Tribidrag, not here at the market at this moment. Tribidrag is actually Zinfandel from homeland.
Okay, here's what I want to tell the audience while you're here. You may not recognize the varietals that Croatia is growing, but you absolutely, positively have to know that they make fantastic wines and have been doing so for thousands of years. My daughter, Kate, and her Pete were in Split, and they brought me back a bottle of rosé and said, you won't believe this rosé. It was one of the greatest rosés I have ever tasted. And that's when I realized I had a lot to learn about Croatia. Tell me about this bottle that you brought.
So when you touch rosé, if they brought it from Split, from Dalmatia, it is something that we call Opal. It is a typical wine. It is like rosé wine from Plavac Mali, which is one red, giving full-bodied wines. Also, rosé is quite not typical rosé wine like Provence style. It is rosé with body,
yeah.
With rosé that you can match with a lot of food.
It's a food wine.
Yeah, it is one. So we are tasting right now Plavac Malimeister, our line, our top tier in regular years. A selection of the best grapes from the best position. We are growing it on a very steep hill, 70% inclination of the hills.
Right.
South-oriented Plavac Mali loves lots of sun and lots of heatness. We are tasting 2011. Vinification process, fermentation and malolactics in oak vats.
What's this bottle going to cost here? What's the price point?
I think that in retail is around $68 in liquor stores.
Wow.
It is a pricey wine, but I can explain you just to get the reality of Dalmatian wine. Our for example, in Plavac Mali, for those premium Plavac Mali that we are producing, the yields per wine are up to half a kilo.
Yeah.
There is no machine working those vineyards. It is not possible, you know. We wish that we can do something with the machines, but there is no way. So we are in the start judge to produce expensive wine because of the price of production of grapes.
Right.
So the idea for us is, okay, we're going to make the best wine we can. The best of the best. We have that material that can give us big wines. So if we have to be expensive, let's make something that is worth of money.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Okay. So we're talking about Croatian wines, and Emil Medan is the marketing director at Stina in Dalmatia, Croatia. If you ever get a chance to try a Croatian wine, I heartily urge you to do that, simply because they have never let me down in the wines that I've tasted, and this is a fantastic red that he's poured for me now. Thank you for being here at Top Drop.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a one-hour celebration of wine, food, and all the great memories that go with them.
Top Drop Vancouver 2018, Terry David Mulligan, Wendy Vallister, who I last saw, not in Jerez. Where were we? Where were we?
That was in Ribera del Duero.
Ribera del Duero.
Yeah.
And you have a table full of Spanish wines here. And I know that you believe in and love Spanish wines. So let's talk about... two things. Spain's place in the world of wine today. Is it solid? Is it growing?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was just reading some statistics the other day. Spain is the country that exports the most wine out of any other country in the world.
Is it possible to define how they make their wine? They make their wines. They make the wines like everybody else, and then they hold on to them for 2 years.
The idea being that when the wines are released, they're ready to drink. However, there are a lot of more modern, a lot of the younger producers are now selling their wines when they're bottled and leaving it to people to drink them now or cellar them themselves.
And yeah. What was the Spanish wines' reaction to that? I mean, what did they think about that?
The Spaniards?
Well, I mean, there's this whole system that's set up and handed down from generation to generation.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Well, the Spaniards will have traditionally in Spain, in most of the growing regions, they drink young wine. So the locals drink young wine,
okay.
Not aged wine, you know. So this was a system that was set up for export, basically, you know.
It was a good system.
Yeah, it was a good system.
We were getting wines that were 2 or 3 years aged in bottles.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what do we got now on the table?
Ah, we've got some really interesting wines today, and I'd like to point out I'm pouring for wines from Spain today,
yes.
Which is the regional body. For whites, we've got a fantastic dry still PX from Montilla Moriles, down just around the Jerez area, just north of Jerez.
Right.
This grape variety is traditionally made into oxidative sort of sherry-style wines. Again, locally, that's what they drink for white wine, right?
Okay.
But not a lot for export. Delicious, really focused, fantastic acidity.
What's that handsome bubble bottle there?
Juve Eca is a traditional cava, sparkling wine, traditional method. So it's made like they make champagne, but with Spanish grapes. And we've got another really interesting Spanish white, Garnacha Blanca. Amazing grape variety, and if you can get your hands on one, I definitely recommend trying the grape variety from whatever producer you can find. There's not a lot of Garnacha Blanca around in Spain, and what grapes there are from very old vines. So you're apt to
this
get
a
great
thing.
Bottle. Yeah, absolutely. It's fabulous. It's fabulous and unique. You know, it doesn't happen in many other countries in the world. I've got an awesome Priorat here, Garnacha Carignana blend with a little cab to finish it off. It's absolutely delicious.
Juan Gil is there.
It's made by the Juan Gil family, actually. And it's called Blue Gray. Reflect the nature of the Licorea soil, right? The schist.
Tell me about the rosé.
The rosé is made from Garnacha, Tinta, in Navarra, in the north of Spain. So it's a lot lighter in color than a lot of the Spanish rosés are. When you get to the north of Spain, there's a lot of cultural exchange between France and northern Spain. The border has changed a lot over history. And so this is made in a little bit of more of a French style, right? And how light
smart.
It is. But from Garnacha, which in my opinion makes the best rosé. Yeah.
And so basically, Spain has made its stamp on British Columbia, in Vancouver in particular, and probably in Canada. How are they doing worldwide?
Well, they're doing fantastically. And interestingly enough, as you see here with the presence of wines from Spain, they're taking Canada seriously. Internationally, absolutely. People are beginning to discover the wines from Spain like they did the wines of Italy and of France years ago during the Franco era. While it was all, you know, still
contained,
within
yes.
the exactly within the country. Now, you know, Spain, we're just like we happen to be another 60, 70 years marketing behind in marketing from the other countries, the old world countries, but we're already selling the most.
The thing about it is, a wine fan should know, marketing's marketing. It's in the bottle. It's what you're making that is so important. You have to trust in Spanish wines. You just simply have to.
Yeah, they have. Spanish wines have by far the greatest price-quality ratio.
Totally.
We've got very old vines, great concentration, low yields, but a lot of grapes. And so this gives us natural quality, you know, in the wines overall, from entry level up to very high level.
I wish you were teaching a wine course, a Spanish wine course here in Vancouver so that we could attend.
Well, I'm working on it right now.
Could you hurry up with it?
Hopefully in the fall with Stratera Wines, we'll be set up to be presenting a fabulous Spanish wine course.
She is Wendy Ballester. And if you ever have a Spanish wine question and you find her, stalk her for 10, 12 seconds. She'll tell you about Spanish wines and Spain in particular. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Lovely to see you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by NewDistrict.ca. Our friends at NewDistrict.ca have launched a wine club. Monthly six-pack selected by local wine ace DJ Kearney. Delivered right to your door. Go to NewDistrict.ca to sign up for the wine club. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, the winner of 15 National Wine Awards for the Wine Align 2018 competition, and now officially Canada's Winery of the Year. Road 13, it's all about the dirt.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Tasting Room Radio. I say that by way of introduction to Mark Blusek, who is the founder and winemaker at St. Innocent Winery. And he will represent not only the Willamette Valley, but the entire Oregon wine industry with this one interview. Is that okay?
I yes, it's fine.
Okay, fine. this is one of the things that I always talk about, and that is I would love to see more of the Oregon wine industry in Vancouver and in British Columbia and in Canada, but somebody else seems to have their attention. That would be the Americans.
Well, you know, the Americans are Americans, and they're kind of full of themselves. So, unfortunately, that's where we sell a lot of wine. But Canada has been a really important part of my profile, my mission since very early. I started selling my second vintage in Ontario. And for a long time, actually, Canada was my biggest single market.
Wow.
Not an American market. I didn't start out with big American markets. I started out in Boston and Minneapolis, St. Paul. and then Toronto. That was the first three places I sold wine to, and I still am represented by the same people in all of those, you know, those things after 28 years.
What were you making 28 years ago? What was your portfolio?
I was actually making Pinot Noir, single vineyard Pinot Noir, from two vineyards that I made for a very long time, kind of like what I'm still doing. And I made a Chardonnay. I still make Chardonnay. And I made sparkling wine back then. I did that for 13 years and then got a little bit frustrated and quit and then realized that some decisions I had made with wines that were on Tirage, so I had made them in a different style but hadn't tasted them. And then when I finally disgorged those wines several years after I quit, I was like, oh, gee, this is actually pretty good. And so I did a test lot. So I made it from 88 through 2000. That was the 13 years. Then I quit. And then in 2006 and 7, I made a Blanc de Blanc Reserve, very long aging, and then kind of said, okay, let's see what that is like. And now I'm finishing selling that. And last year I said, okay, I'm making not only one, but this last year I made three different sparkling wines. And I'm back full on the bandwagon after 30 years.
Of course
I'm like, I've got to make sparkling wine. I love it.
Mark Vlasic, St. Innocent Winery, who is the founder and the winemaker in Jefferson, Oregon. How big is the portfolio now?
Well, I just shrunk it. I decided after 30 years that I wasn't going to retire. I was just going to reinvent myself. So I sold the interest that I had in a fairly large vineyard, which is actually the second vineyard I ever made wine from, that I bought 12 years ago. I was an owner, but not a majority owner, and built a winery at that vineyard that I did own independently. And then this last fall, I sold the building to those people at the vineyard, sold part of my interest, and bought 47 and a half acres in what's now, I think, one of the most interesting new regions in the Willamette Valley. It's called the South Salem Hills. Okay. And it's a really interesting south-facing series of actually four different little hillsides with two ravines that kind of cut the property into four parcels. And I planted all of those parcels with both Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, but really focusing on Chardonnay. One of the reasons is that there isn't very much Chardonnay in Oregon. Originally, it was half Chardonnay, but we kind of quit in frustration. The original clones were from California, and they were really designed to be grown in Bordeaux. We don't have a Bordeaux climate. We have a Burgundy climate. And so it took quite a while to actually get some real Burgundy clones into Oregon. When that happened, I was like, I like this. This is a really nice wine. And so when I decided to plant my own stuff, I was like, well, I could plant Pinot Noir, which is, there's, you know, 55% of Oregon is planted to it. Or I could plant Chardonnay, which is 5%. And I thought, gee, do I grow the grape, which there's, you know, a boatload, or do I grow the grape, which is 1/11th of Pinot Noir? And as the climate changes and it gets a little bit warmer, we're actually moving more into the perfect zone for Chardonnay. And I thought, you know, I'm building this for my kids. And then vines are at their most mature when they're 30 to 50 years old. They make the most interesting wine. And why would I plant something that's going to get too warm? So I'm going to plant Chardonnay, where it'll be perfect for them. Because I want to set them up well.
Mark Vlasic, St. Innocent Winery, who is the founder and the winemaker in Jefferson, Oregon. I will note, for those of you who are not standing with us at the table, that we have a St. Innocent Pinot Noir on the table. After all that Chardonnay talk, 2015. How many clones in there?
So Temperance Hill in this vintage is just one. It's all Pommard clone, which is a little bit crazy.
Is there a number on that?
No. No, it's one of the original clones that came from California. So we don't refer to it as a number. There's two clones that we gave names to, Badensville and Pommard, and they were the original clones that came to Oregon. And then we brought all the 100, 113, 14, 15, the 777, the 667, the 548, you know, all those crazy things. But this is way back to the heritage, and it actually turns out to be one of the most earth-driven, one of the latest things to ripen. And so this vineyard, which is actually very high altitude and cool, it kind of makes no sense. But for me, it's always the wine that I pick in the summer. Temperance Hill, because it's high and cool and relatively late, always has a really nice acidity. You think about summertime, what do you want to drink? Well, you often drink white wines. And is it just because it's white? No, it's because white wines have more acid, they have more freshness, they have a bit more purity. But this is exactly the nature of this wine in my lineup of single vineyard Pinot Noirs. It has beautiful freshness, it has really nice acidity, and this particular part of the Eola Amity Hill appellation, it's actually the highest in the southern part, which is the Eola part of the Eola Amity Hills. It's the highest planted vineyard in the whole area. And because of that, there is a really nice purity and slightly smoky quality that comes from the grapes. And when you think about what you're eating in the summer, it's things that you grill. You're not sitting in the oven on, roasting your butt off for 5 hours, you know, braising some, you know, some ribs or something. You're like, flip it on the grill and put it in my mouth. And for me, this is the ideal wine for that kind of thing.
Flip it on the grill and put it in my mouth.
Sounds pretty good.
I think you have distilled the essence of summer in Willamette. St. Innocent, are you seeing guest visits? Are you seeing tour buses and things? And
we discourage tour buses.
Yeah.
But we're open 7 days a week. And even though we've only been in our new location for 2 weeks, we opened on the 5th of May. So we've always had a tasting room open 7 days a week. Our new location, just off I-5 in the South Salem Hills, is still open 7 days a week on Enchanted Way. And we actually, there's other vineyards on this road, but none of them picked up on Enchanted Way Vineyard. So we grabbed it, trademarked it, and you could come to Enchanted Way Vineyard and have an enchanted afternoon sitting outside on our porch on the deck looking down at a pond. Populate it with bass, but
yes.
There's a word for that. Well, anyway, there are bass that were put in this pond like 8 and 10 years ago, and they're pretty good size, and can fish for bass and you know, we'll flay them and build a little campfire or something, and or just take them home and cook them.
Here's the sad thing. I did that job for 3 summers.
Oh.
Putting trout in rivers and lakes. I should know the name of that. However, I will blame it on the St. Innocent Pinot Noir 2015. Thank you for coming up here, coming north, and being part of Top Drop. Pretty nice room, isn't it?
It's a total pleasure to be here. Thank you. It's
Thank
an
you.
Honor.
St. Innocent Winery, Mark Vlasic, who is the founder and the winemaker. You can now find him in Jefferson, Oregon. This is Tasting Room Radio at Top Drop 2018 in Vancouver.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, the winner of 15 National Wine Awards for the Wine Align 2018 competition, and now officially Canada's Winery of the Year. Road 13, it's all about the dirt. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. This summer, they invite you to visit and enjoy not only their new patio, but also you can create your own picnic right there with ingredients from their restaurant. And you can pair your picnic with glasses or bottles of their wine. He is Ezra Sipes, and he is the CEO of Summerhill Winery in the Okanagan, in Kelowna. Hello, Ezra.
Hi.
And at this time of the year, is it possible to say how busy your property becomes, just physically? I mean, you're talking about the human condition during the summer months up there?
Well, it's like a party here every single day is what it is. We do, we have a 200-person dining room, and we do that many for lunch and that many for dinner. We have now 3 tasting rooms and a reception room, and we have a gigantic staff to take care of everybody who comes. So you show up here and you are arriving somewhere where there is a palpable energy in the air.
And you can count on this, can't you? This happens every summer.
Yeah, that's right. Even last year when it was the smoke and ogan, this year has been quite beautiful. A little hazy, of course, as everywhere is in BC, but you can see the mountains at least this year.
All right. Well, we've just gone through the Wine Align Awards. Were you happy with your results?
Yeah, we're happy with our results. The awards are at an awkward time of year for us. You know, we have all of the approvals to get with organics and everything, so we aren't able to submit all of our new releases until the following year. So we submitted a few wines, and our Ehrenfelzer Ice Wine won a gold medal, which was very nice. That's a wine we're really proud of, and that we sell throughout Asia. So that was really nice to get a good honor for that award. And those, that, you know, it's meaningful for that audience to know that the wines are you know, celebrated by the industry peers here in Canada.
Hey, Ezra, there's also a more organic daily, weekly, monthly wine award that happens in your tasting room. In other words, certain releases become gold and silver and platinum winners throughout the course of the summer. So who are your, what are your big three pours? What are most popular this summer?
Oh, the big three pours, Sipes Brut, perennially the most popular wine that we sell, our best-selling wine. Our Ehrenfelter is incredibly popular and continues to be. And the Ehrenfelter is one of those wines that you know, can really surprise people because it's just so juicy and full of character, and you know, and it has good quality to it. So it's not just easy to drink, but also from a critical perspective, you know, it can be appreciated as well. And our best-selling red wine continues to be Bacco Noir. Who would have thought, eh?
Wow.
The old hybrids that were grown here, we sell it with a heritage label, and we tell the story of the 1970s and what was planted here. And it's our neighbor, the Ides family. They never pulled out their grapes, so we wanted to buy their Zweigelt for our ice wine. I said, well, will you buy our Bacco Noir as well? And, you know, at the time it was like, well, okay. But everybody loves it. It has so much character and such a great acidity to it naturally that it's, you know, it's become our most popular red wine. And we make just under 1,000 cases of it a year, and we sell out of it every year.
Ezra Sipes, CEO at Summerhill Winery in the Okanagan, in the slightly smoky Okanagan, not so much as same
easy,
as last year.
Easy Okanagan.
Anything else, any surprise? I always ask you the same question, Ezra. Anything you want to surprise us with in the fall? What's coming we can keep an eye out for?
Well, actually, there's something coming that I'm really excited about. You know that our vineyard here at Summerhill has been certified by Demeter Canada since 2012
right.
as a biodynamic vineyard. And we're all organic, and all our winemaking is organic. But just this year, for the first time, we're actually getting Demeter to certify a couple of wines that have come off of our vineyard. So we'll have British Columbia's first biodynamic wine released. And it's pretty cool, actually. Reading the standards for biodynamic wine was like, it literally brought a tear to my eye. And it's so weird because it's a standard, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's about authenticity and uniqueness of expression and farming as art. And it's just a gorgeous statement when you read the background and objective for biodynamic wine. And basically what it is you know, it's about truth and authenticity in wine. So they want you to have no yeast or no yeast nutrients. They don't want you to have animal finding agents or any sort of adjuncts or additives in the wine. They want it to be very pure and express the vineyard in the year. And we started making wine that way, you know, a long time ago when we got the biodynamic certification. We started making wine to that standard. Doing that really gave us a strong insight into our vineyard and the health of our vineyard.
Sure.
It really informed the way that we manage our vineyard.
Okay. Oh, Ezra, you know, this is really bookish of you.
Oh,
because if you're standing there and you're looking at 100 bottles or 200, 300 bottles, yeah, and you're thinking, what did he say about that biodynamic thing?
Oh,
what is it that we want to know?
Beauty. Simple.
Yeah.
Beauty.
Beauty.
And just like that purity, right? That feeling of that pure, authentic, beautiful, you know, if like when you drink Coca-Cola, you don't think of it as being beautiful. It might refresh you, it might give you a sugar buzz or a caffeine buzz, and you might like it, and that's great. But you don't think about like beauty and purity. Like these concepts can taste them, you can feel them, and it can be visceral, and it can make the hair on your arms stand up, and so, it can make you say, like, wow, just like looking at great art or listening to great music.
You know? So are biodynamic wines and natural wines sort of country cousins?
Yeah, in a way they are. Biodynamic wines, you don't want them to go off the rails, right, and be poor wines or flawed wines. They should be technically good wines by anybody's standards of what a good wine means. And with natural wine in that sort of genre, I think there's more room for off-the-rail wines that, that proponents of that genre accept. And the, I don't think those, that's not accepted under Demeter standards. Part of the standard is that it's good-tasting wine.
Ezra Sipes, CEO of Summerhill. Now, you did mention something about music. At the same time that you're, you have this career and family involved deeply into the Okanagan Valley, you also have been playing music and appreciating music for years and years and years. Right. And all of a sudden, I have in my hand a CD, and there you are. Tell us about the Utnutz.
Yeah, well, that's something that my family's always done since we've been little kids. We've always had music in our lives, and I used to do it professionally with my brother for many years. And when we moved back here to the farm and didn't do it for a long time, you know, I was getting lots of satisfaction from work and from family and a great life here, but I did, at a time, get really quite depressed and quite down and realized it's because I wasn't doing music. And it really struck me how important it is to my life to have that sort of direct creative outlet, just on a vibrational level, just saying, hey, here I am, and here's what I have to offer to the world, you know, in sound and in words. And so we started playing again, and it's evolved into the Utnutz, which is me and all of my brothers and my daughter, Ruth, who's 11 years old. The five of us are the Utnutz, and we are a rock and roll band. We write really silly songs. You could categorize us in the children's music genre, although there's a genre that's emerging in the States. I really like it. They call it kindie rock, and that's more suitable to what it is. It really is a rock band, and you know, we play for all ages, but it's G-rated, right? So you can enjoy it with your whole family.
You're heading for the Salmon Arm Roots and Blues Festival.
Yeah, that's right. We've been playing festivals all summer long, and we are just about to head to Salmon Arm Roots and Blues, which is a festival we go to as audience members for the last 5 or 6 years. It's an awesome festival, really well programmed by Peter North there, and he came to our showcase in Edmonton last September and hired us on the spot to play Roots and Blues this year, so we are stoked.
And what time are you playing? What days?
We're going to do our main rock and roll set on the Shade stage on Saturday afternoon. And then on Sunday in the Engage workshop tent, we're going to be doing sing-along songs for young children.
So can you be two bands at one time? Could you open for yourself?
We could probably could. Yeah, we do it all. There you go.
Nice. And how did you know that you had the lead singer of the band in your house?
We've all been playing music since we were kids, and the next generation is no different. We used to play Elvis and Patsy Cline and records and Little Richard and Chuck Berry around the house when my daughter was young. So she was raised on these voices, these sort of nuanced rock and roll voices where, you know, it's not just the note you hit, it's how you hit it. And she just naturally started singing like that. We started doing open mics together when she, I think the first one we did, she was 5 or 6 years old. We got up and did an open mic together. She started writing songs when she was 7. And she's undeniable. It's great. She blows people away. And she always steals the show. So, you know, we had a program director from SiriusXM. They're playing a song she wrote on rotation there. He said, you know, Ezra, just so you know, from now and henceforth, you will be known only as Ruth's dad, and I hope you're okay with that.
Yes, of course you are. There is one thing I will ask you, and this is just mere speculation. If she has to make a choice between music or the wine business, would you be okay if she went and became a musician?
Well, she's so cool. I mean, she's got the voice. She's got the artistic sensibility, and I've taken her to music industry conferences, and she sees me doing, you know, reaching out to program directors and stuff like that. She sees the behind the scenes, and I think she's on her path. I think she's going to do music, and whether it's as an artist or as a recording engineer or as doing live sound or doing booking or whatever it is, I think she's on her path. She'll find her niche in the music industry.
Congratulations on the music career. Congratulations on the success at the winery.
Oh, thanks so much, Terry David. Great to speak with you.
Ezra Sipes, Summerhill. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. This summer, they invite you to visit and enjoy not only their new patio, but also you can create your own picnic right there with ingredients from their restaurant. And you can pair your picnic with glasses or bottles of their wine.